That's right. Oops.
The council will come to order. Sue, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity he or she is authorized to represent. First thing we're going to do is to hear the consent agenda, which we did not have enough folks yesterday, so we'll take a vote on the consent agenda. Please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Item 432, accept staff report and recommendation and order of council for William E. Lobdell, Measure 37 claim.
Chris?
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Durth, the city's Measure 37 program manager, and I'm here to present a claim brought by William Lobdell. The claim is in Northwest Portland in the Linton neighborhood. To summarize the claim for you, it's brought by William Lobdell. It's located on Northwest Germantown Road, just off of Germantown Court, off of Northwest Germantown Road. It was submitted in December of last year. The compensation demanded is $1.4 million, and the preferred resolution is compensation or waiver of the environmental regulations and the current zoning. I neglected to put that there. The regulations challenged include the environmental overlay zones and the downzoning of the property from R7 to R20. Here's an aerial photograph of the property taken in 2005. You can see that the property is heavily wooded. None of the streets in the property are developed. The only developed roads are on the edge there, on the southern edge. Springville Road is a partially developed road and could potentially allow access from the south there. You can see it's just above Northwest St. Helens. Another aerial photograph giving you a little broader view. The stream by the pink arrow is where the properties are. The stream goes right through the middle of the Lobdell properties. You can see that all the way up to the headwaters, the area is natural. All of the properties surrounding the stream, all the way down to just above the Lobdell property, are in public ownership and completely protected. Here is a LIDAR topographical map showing how steep the site is. You can see the stream runs through the middle of the property there. The elevation gain from bottom to top is 170 feet, approximately. The right-of-way, which is undeveloped, would be, if it were developed, an average of over 70% grade, according to PDOT. And remember that Fire Bureau regulations allow only up to 21% grade. So this is a very, very steep site. And then some portions of the site are even over 100% grade. That means 45 degrees or greater. Here's some photos of the property. You can see it's a very beautiful property. It has the stream running through the middle, steep slopes, heavily wooded. A zone map showing the environmental conservation zones outside of the stream area and the environmental protection zone immediately surrounding the stream there. This map shows BES's estimate of what would be required for sewer. There is currently no sewer connection on the site. If this were to be developed, sewer connections would have to be made way down the hill, just off of one side or the other of St. Helens, approximately 1,100 feet at least. So to analyze the Measure 37 claim, we look at these six aspects. You've seen them before. The ownership was gained by Mr. Lobdell in 1966 and 1970. And then we look to see whether the regulations he has challenged are indeed land use regulations, and they are under Measure 37. These were enforced through a letter from the Bureau of Development Services in January of this year. And then we look to see whether any of the regulations he has challenged are exempt for public health and safety reasons. And you recall under Section 3 of the Act, it states that this Act shall not apply to land use regulations restricting or prohibiting activities for the protection of public health and safety. So we look back at the adopting language that the Council used when you adopted the environmental protections on this property in the Northwest Hills Natural Areas Protection Plan in 1991. And we find the language here passed by the Council stating, in part, by decreasing runoff and increasing groundwater infiltration, the forest protects downstream neighborhoods from flooding. Also, by stabilizing the soil and reducing runoff and erosion, the forest protects the community from landslides, slumps, and mud flows. Maintaining this equilibrium reduces the potential danger to public health and safety posed by steep hillside slopes, such as are on the property that Mr. Lovedell has claimed on. And in addition, the Council made these significant findings at the time in the Northwest Community Plan. There's inadequate water supply or pressure for residential service in the area. The elevation is too high to provide adequate service pressures. In addition, sanitary sewer is not available to most lots. No extensions are planned. And also, this area is within a potential landslide hazard area. And indeed, Mr. Lovedell's property is mostly within a rapidly moving landslide zone. And then finally, the road system is substandard. Fire and emergency access are constrained. So for all these reasons, I think it's very clear that the Council had in mind that public health and safety was one of the primary reasons you passed the environmental protections on this and other properties in the Northwest Community Plan. So we find that the regulations that enforce the environmental protections are exempt for public health and safety because they limit disturbance area and therefore work to prevent potential floods, landslides, and erosion. They protect water bodies to maintain storage and conveyance for stream flows and stormwater. They limit damage to trees and vegetation and stabilize slopes and prevent erosion. And it should be noted that the city applied these protections not property by property, but to larger areas to prevent cumulative impacts of development over time. So we examine the regulations, the environmental regulations that apply to Mr. Lovedell and other properties, and find that these regulations, and I'm not going to go through them one by one, but these limit disturbance area to prevent potential floods, landslides, and erosion, such as limits in disturbance area. These regulations protect water bodies to maintain storage and conveyance for stream flows and stormwater. These regulations limit damage to trees, natural ground cover, and provide for replanting, such as our protections, tree protections and tree removal constraints. And then we find that these regulations don't apply to Mr. Lovedell's property because they apply only to existing development, which doesn't apply in his case, or to property that's zoned for commercial, industrial, and multi-dwelling residential uses. And finally, these regulations we find not to be exempt for public health and safety reasons. For example, fencing requirements or exterior light requirements, those don't necessarily protect public health and safety, and they are not exempt under Measure 37. Next, we'll examine the challenge to the change in zoning. And when Mr. Lovedell purchased his property in the late 60s, early 70s, it was zoned R7, and you can see the indication there in the lower left. Later, with the Northwest Hills Natural Areas Protection Plan adopted by the Council in 91, the Council found, in part, that the area currently zoned R7 with an R5 comp designation extends over a steep ravine and creek system, which is unable to sustain development at this density. All of the zone change areas are not served by sewer and must presently be served by on-site septic systems. Development at the presently zoned housing densities in these areas is currently unfeasible because lot sizes would not be large enough to provide on-site disposal. So the changes in zoning in 1991 changed the zoning to Mr. Lovedale and other properties there to R20. You can see in the lower left-hand corner there, and with an R10 comp designation. And then later, just last year in May of 2006, you adopted the Linton Hillside recommended plan and removed that comp designation, that R10 comp designation. So as of today, the zoning on Mr. Lovedale's property is R20 with the same comp plan designation. So in conclusion, we find that the downzoning from R7 to R20 is exempt for public health and safety reasons. Clearly, the council had all of the site constraints and the dangers to public health and safety in this area in mind when you downzone this and other properties. And then finally, we look to see whether there's a reduction of fair market value on Mr. Lovedale's property. And because we have found that the property has not been restricted by the non-exempt regulations, we also find that the value has not been reduced. So in summary, most of the challenged environmental overlay zone regulations are exempt under Measure 37 because they restrict or prohibit activities for the protection of public health and safety. The zone changes are also exempt for public health and safety reasons. The few non-exempt regulations do not restrict use of the property, and there has been no reduction in value. So our recommendation to you would be to deny Mr. Lovedale's Measure 37 claim. But we want to also mention briefly what Mr. Lovedale's next steps are, because he does have the ability to develop his property with a potential of up to 8 residential units. And our staff is available to meet with him to discuss the service issues, which are challenging for development of streets, water, and sewer. And we can assist him with his development proposals as well. So we're stand ready to assist him however we can. Be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions? Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Could the claimant please come forward?
I spoke to Mr. Lovedale yesterday. He did tell me that he would be here. We sent him the staff report about 10 days ago or so. But when I spoke to him yesterday, he told me he had not visited his post office box in several weeks and had not picked it up. He said he was going to do that. But that's all I know.
But he did advise that he would be here today.
That's what he told me yesterday.
Could the city attorney shed some light on how we should proceed from here?
Well, since Mr. Lovedale has received notice and indicated that he would be here, I guess you have a couple different options. You could proceed ahead to deny his decide his claim. You could decide to hold this and continue this until you've heard the other agenda items and pick it up again at the end to give him time to get here. Or you could continue it for another day.
It's okay. You just wait till the end of the other hearings?
Sure.
Okay. This will be continued after the next two items. Actually, the next item is a 2:30 time certain.
That's true.
And a 3 p.m. time certain. So
can we take other testimony from?
If there is anyone else to be heard on this claim, you could take their testimony now.
Could you read item 433, the 2:30 time certain?
Right. And Mayor, we do have three people who signed up for the Measure 37.
Oh, testimony. I'm sorry. Okay, let's go ahead and hear the testimony on that. Who has signed up? Please call them.
We have Ken Puri, Terry Thompson, and Ross Fulberg.
Just a second till we get the other folks seated. Who's the third person?
Ross.
Good. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Starting with me. My name is Ken Peary. I'm a board member with Friends of Forest Park. I live at 1500 Southwest Park, number 313 in Portland. On behalf of the board and members of Friends of Forest Park, I'd like to express support for the staff's recommendation to deny this Measure 37 claim. I'd also like to add that your Measure 37 website is a great resource for concerned citizens, and your staff is knowledgeable and very responsive. If you ratify this decision, you'll send a strong message to other Measure 37 claimants across the state that their property rights do not give them the right to harm public health and safety protected by environmental regulations. As you know, Forest Park is the largest forested urban park in the country. This park is a treasured place for thousands of local citizens of all ages and incomes who walk and bike the trails and experience nature close to the city. The forest also has significant natural resource value, acting as an air and water filter, stabilizing soil and slowing runoff from stormwater, and providing over 5,000 acres of critical habitat for many species of wildlife. This habitat is connected to the regional landscape, with some species traveling from as far as the Oregon coast. Streams, even intermittent ones such as the one through the Lobdell property, are especially important ecosystems for amphibians. There are many challenges to the integrity of Forest Park. The Friends of Forest Park takes each of these challenges seriously, as even small impacts can have a cumulative, long-term, corrosive effect. A development project such as this one, if allowed, directly adjacent to the park, would create what's called an edge effect, bringing domestic impacts such as pets, invasive vegetation, auto pollution, noise, and light closer to the heart of the park, where habitat is richest. Developing the steep slopes in this ravine would also require major tree clearing and result in severe erosion. As a professional land planner myself, I recognize that building 30 lots on this parcel's extreme topography, even 8 lots, in my opinion, has probably never been feasible. The original plat was highly optimistic in its promised capacity. But thankfully, the city staff report recognized the problems with this proposal on a range of levels. Your staff report is clearly a well-reasoned response to an unfounded compensation proposal. I'd like to end with some words from some other city planners who imagined the value of Forest Park 100 years ago. The Olmsteds wrote, "There are a succession of ravines covered with remarkably beautiful primeval woods. It is true that some people look upon such woods merely as a troublesome encumbrance standing in the way of more profitable use of the land. But future generations will not feel so and will bless the people who are wise enough to get such woods preserved." Thank you.
My name's Terry Thompson. I live at 8922 Northwest Germantown Road, adjacent to Mr. Lobdell's lots. Public health and safety issues are a huge concern for me and my neighbors. It is my hope that the city continues to keep the environmental overlays on Mr. Lobdell's property. The unsafe steep slopes are landslide prone and would not be able to support additional septic stormwater runoff. If trees are cut down to allow for development, erosion will occur and runoff will be a problem for neighbors downhill from the development. Natural area resources and habitat on this property would be adversely affected. The natural setting, trees, stream, views, and privacy are what attracted me to this area and are the reasons why I bought my house. Development would destroy the uniqueness of this neighborhood. The scenic canyon, forest, and waterfall should remain protected. Approximately 10 years ago, I got support from neighbors, Friends of Forest Park, Linton Neighborhood Association, Forest Park Neighborhood Association, in protecting the waterfall from a proposed BES solution to flooding, which would have destroyed the scenic view and natural setting of this gem. We were successful. BES implemented a less obtrusive solution that did not obstruct the waterfall. Hundreds of people, including Mr. Lobdell, signed my petition to save this waterfall. I urge you to accept the city staff report recommendation to deny Mr. Lobdell's claim. Thank you.
I'm Ross Fulberg. I'm a resident of Linton and a current Neighborhood Association president. I know the Linton Hillside is fairly familiar to many of you after the recent adoption that you passed last year regarding it. And in that adoption, one of the main concerns was the fact that Linton's somewhat unique in the fact that the city of Portland has 4 kind of major environmental issues in its environmental overlays. Those are landslide, earthquake, fire, and flood. The area that of the Linton Hillside happens to lie in all three of those. And the only reason there's a fourth is probably because it's just too high to be flooded. However, given that, in the 1996 heavy rains that caused Portland's flooding, a house adjacent to Germantown near Mr. Liddell's property actually slid down the hill and was destroyed. So this is not just a feasibility thing, but it's been shown that it's actually a genuine issue. I think that the ruling in 1991 basically didn't talk. It really just said developing on that was not feasible. And by the presentation given to you earlier, you can see. I mean, when you have a 20% grade is the maximum allowed, and they're having 70% grades, whereas state highways, I believe, are required to show warned trucks of anything over a 6% grade. So this is significantly, I mean, a steep lot. In addition, the compensation claim seems somewhat absurd, given the amount of infrastructure required to be able to develop just any homes on this lot, and to be able to do that. So it would really, in the spirit of the Hillside Plan, along with all the obvious issues that were mentioned, it would be my recommendation that you guys you deny this claim. One suggestion may be that with the current the recently passed bond issue to purchase property and the fact that the city has made an active effort to purchase many properties that are either in Forest Park or bounded by Forest Park, maybe this issue could be taken out of Mr. Liddell's hands as a negotiation for the city purchasing the property and kind of creating a continuous protective area for the streams involved. Finally, the issue of where the property is located. At the merging of Germantown and Bridge Road, where the property is already, in a sense, a failed traffic area. It's dangerous. The corner there is very difficult to turn. Large trucks can't make it's basically a U-turn. And I think that they would present a major safety issue if you tried to have further vehicle traffic entering anywhere near that site. So thank you very much.
Thanks, folks.
Chris, do you see Mr. Lobdell? Mr. Lobdell in the room? Okay, we'll go ahead and hear the 2:30 time certain. Please read item 433.
Item 433, accept the report of Project Homeless Connect, January 2007.
Commissioner Stinn.
Great. Well, thank you, Mayor Potter. We actually just want to take a couple of minutes and celebrate some good news. I'm going to ask Heather Lyons, the city's homeless coordinator, and Ruth Benson, who's in charge of Project Homeless Connect, to come on up. I'll start, and you're going to see why this happened in just a minute, but I wanted to share with the council that Portland and Multnomah County won a national award, the Pursuit of Solutions Award for our Project Homeless Connect, from our good friend Philip Mondano at the Interagency Council on the Homeless. The mayor and I know him well.
Yes.
And, we have a medal that Randy can wear.
For those special occasions.
Yeah, or Dan can wear. I think most people know that we've had great success as a community over the last 2 years. We still have a long way to go, but we're 2 years into what we're calling a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness, and we've helped as a community 1,000 people who had been living on the street for a year or more into permanent housing, and we're seeing them stay there. One of the pieces of that effort is Project Homeless Connect, and Project Homeless Connect is both a twice-a-year event. We do it once in January for individuals and in the summer for families. And also, I think, almost what we're trying to make, and I'll show this today with some of the folks we're honoring, almost a brand or an approach, a strategy of how to try and take on homelessness. We want to better connect our community to homeless people and homeless people to our community. And Project Homeless Connect is an event at which we've had all kinds of services brought together at the Coliseum and basically invited homeless people to show up. It's also something that the mayor at the first event said, you know, we need to do Homeless Connect every day. And we're after kind of the concept of a permanent access center where we could do this kind of work. And as you'll hear a little bit later today, many of our community institutions are beginning to say the concept of connecting our community to the homeless and helping create some of the dignity and spirit that's necessary for people to get back on their feet is something that we can put into other venues as well. And the council's heard me say it before, but one of the things that I think has really changed in the last 2 years is just that concept of recognizing that people have to feel part of a community. No matter how many services and other things you can get to them, if you're completely isolated, as chronically homeless people often are, it's very hard to turn things around. If you can imagine yourself with no family and friends and no place to take a shower, how would you turn it around? And so what we want to do today is just very briefly give the council some of the statistics and information and kind of the results of Homeless Connect, which you helped make happen. And then I wanted to give two individuals and two corporations awards from us and say thank you for their work, because although the greater project won the award, we won it because of these folks you're looking at right here, and I wanted to recognize them today in front of the council. So, Heather and Ruth.
Thank you. Mayor and City Council, it's really an honor to be here to present to you this information around a successful Project Homeless Connect. One of the things that I value so much is how Project Connect is connected to the larger 10-year plan to end homelessness. And one of the things that I want to say in terms of the results that we've seen, it's been kind of an unusual week for me. I started out in Calgary, Canada for 2 days and then was in Salem yesterday and just at lunch today talking to some folks from Sacramento about our efforts around the 10-year plan. And every single time I talk about the results and I show that graph, the graph that you probably hopefully have in front of you around the street count reductions, people either are shocked into silence and then give a positive response or applaud. And it's really, really nice to have that kind of response. And I think that the work around the 10-year plan and has been really successful. And Portland is being looked at as a model now internationally as well as nationally. The role of Project Homeless Connect is absolutely critical to seeing future success in the 10-year plan. If we are not able to continue to provide opportunities for civic engagement and corporate engagement, I don't believe that we'll have the level of success in future years that we need to truly end homelessness in this community. So you have the results in front of you on the sheet and also on the PowerPoint. I'll leave those to you to read. I'm sure I've presented those before you a few times before, so I won't go through the whole thing. I just wanted to acknowledge our success and that we are being looked at as a best practice and not only in implementing the 10-year plan, but how we connect our 10-year plan to our Homeless Connect events. And with that, I'll leave it with Ruth to talk about Homeless Connect. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you. As Commissioner Sten mentioned, in that Project Homeless Connect is just one component of the Ending Homelessness Plan. In 2006, after a visit to San Francisco's Project Homeless Connect event, Portland launched their first event, and we were amazed at the results that we got. We served over 900 people, only having expected 500 to walk through the front door. That success has seen us grow. This year, we saw City Council dedicate funds to two permanent positions for Project Homeless Connect and the Ending Homelessness Plan. We saw our list of platinum donors grow from 6 to 8. One-time donors that were giving sporadically from event to event are now signed on permanently and want to make sure that we are contacting them for each event. We've got volunteers that started out just giving for the day, and they're now actually team leads for several of the areas at the event itself. And we saw several clients come back in January 2007 to serve as volunteers who had come from the January 2006 event. And most importantly, we've seen the Trailblazers partner with us to help to produce a video that will hopefully get the word out there and increase community awareness. The feedback that we have heard from clients and from volunteers has been the same. Everybody talks about what a life-changing experience Project Homeless Connect is. We've had so many stories, so many anecdotes of the homeless folks that come, as well as the volunteers, and just the stories that they find out from these people and how they ended up on the street and, you know, the kinds of experiences that they've had. I think probably one of the ones that I remember the best from this last event was I had a gentleman standing there in the middle, and he looked really lost. I had to ask him, I said, are you looking for a particular service or an area that you need to go to? He says, no, I'm trying to count up how much you've spent on me today. I'm sorry? He goes, well, no, I figured you spent about $300 on me in medical, probably another $200 in dental, and lunch, that had to be at least $20, not to mention the coffee. And he just went on and on and on and was adding all this up in his head. He says, I've never had anybody care that much. That is just one of many stories of people who come to the event and how they're moved. By the numbers, this last time at 2007, we saw 850 people come through the door to receive services and 550 general volunteers, as well as 300 service-specific volunteers. This includes the doctors, chiropractors, optometrists, lawyers. We also gathered data at each one of our events that we put into the homeless management information system to track how many people are coming through the door and to track basic demographic information, as well as whether or not they got their services and needs met. As I mentioned before, our sponsors list just keeps growing. We've had folks move from the gold sponsorship to the platinum sponsorship just because they want to continue to participate more and more in each of our events. And the list of partners is huge. And again, that just continues to grow with every event that we give. Each event has given us some lessons that we've learned. Last year at our 2006 event, we learned that apples were not a good thing to provide, as many people have dental issues and are not able to eat the apples. Well, this time around, we learned about poppy seed baked items. They were not very popular, as participants were concerned about drug testing and possibly even losing their housing.
Is that true, or is that just a popular myth about the poppy seeds?
It's true. It will show up as a trace, but whether or not they'll take your housing or your job, that I don't know. So, we will not be serving poppy seeded items.
Okay, I hear it all the time. I just wasn't sure that it was really.
Yeah, terrible. No, actually, it will show traces. I mean, you have to consume quite a bit, and you have to be tested within a certain amount of time. Just in case you needed that. Okay. Anyway, moving right along. One of our more important lessons that we continue to learn is providing on-site Oregon IDs. This time we were able to provide 33 Oregon IDs, and we were limited to 33, mostly by logistics and the cost of the ID itself. This has been such a large issue that now we're looking at a bill going through legislation right now that will hopefully provide Oregon IDs to the lowest poverty level residents in Oregon for free.
Yeah, so. That bill is stalled up right now. So.
Is it? Oh, dear. Okay. Again, cell phones was a new learning experience. We've provided cell phones at every event, but for some reason it fell through this last event, and we had not realized what a top priority it was for folks to be able to come and be able to place phone calls to long-lost family, to friends, and even just connecting with jobs. So again, something that we are hoping we will not run into again. The community response has been overwhelming, and so one of the things that we continue to work on is how to best and most effectively use the folks that come to volunteer their time. And of course, dental and vision are always our first services to go in the day. They usually close down within an hour, hour and a half of starting the whole program just because there's so many people that need them. So those are just some basic highlights from the last Project Homeless Connect event.
Great. Any questions from the council for staff? Well, great work.
Impressive.
Thank you. And so we've got two individuals and two corporations that we wanted to honor. And I think maybe what I'll do is have people stand up and I'll read and tell you why they're getting the awards. And then maybe after I do all four, we could ask the whole council to come down and take a picture with each person.
Do we have a sign-up sheet for testimony?
Oh, for testimony on this? I don't know if anybody would want to testify. We'll check. So why not give the awards and then we'll take testimony if anybody would like. Our first award is to an individual, Bob Kramer. There he is. And you get a little bit of a sense from the list of all the services provided, the amount of detail that goes into planning a Project Homeless Connect event. And we actually last time posted on the PSU listserv that we were looking for an intern to help us out with Project Homeless Connect, and Bob showed up. He's actually a retired oil industry economist and is prepared to debate Randy on biodiesel if necessary. As well as the current CEO of a software company, and so he did seem like kind of an unlikely candidate, and he, to my knowledge, did not have a background in homeless issues, but wanted to make a contribution, and he did. Bob was the kind of person that you look for in every event where big and small tasks worked great for him. He did everything. I think dedicated over 100 hours to Homeless Connect, including administrative support, an entire day setting the place up, driving to Wilsonville and Newburgh throughout Portland to get juice, ketchup, bagels, T-shirts, and water. He cleaned up the coffee when the percolator exploded at the event. And after working for 12 hours at the event, he drove all the leftover food to the shelters in Portland so it continued to get used. And we actually borrowed his garage that evening to store what we didn't get out that night. He also, while he was there, really literally in addition to doing logistics, was the first person to grab somebody, help them, and make sure the day went well. I was touched by his enthusiasm, and I hope you'll help me in thanking Bob as being part of the solution to end homelessness by connecting in Portland. Thank you. And our next award winner is Rochelle Rosenberg. Hey, Rochelle. Thank you. I'm really pleased to recognize Rochelle today. She has a lifetime of service, has worked for many years with severely emotionally disturbed children, and for the last many years has been raising her children and helping her husband's psychology practice. She has volunteered on all three Project Homeless Connect events, and I think she got connected because she has a friend in Serena Cruz's office, and through that connection has given 420 volunteer hours of her time and has taken on the job of leading the Vision Services area, which Ruth mentioned is really, I mean, it's amazing how much people need this help. There's no doubt that the Vision Services that Rochelle has put together has been one of, if not the most popular part of Homeless Connect. And what she's done is basically gone out on the homeless's behalf and nurtured relationships with really what's become an amazing list of sponsors: LensCrafters, the Pacific University School of Optometry, and Goodwill. And we were able to offer eye exams and 40 vouchers for eyeglasses right on site. And they also had a team of eye doctors, fitting people, that gave 116 people appointments to come in and get a free pair of prescription glasses. So over 156 people were helped at the last one to get glasses that obviously if you can't see, you can't do a lot of things. We actually, and I think this is really thanks to Rochelle, now have the LensCrafters and others saying, what more can we do? And they're actually trying to figure out how to get their whole team from the national office to come to our next PHC to see if they could actually get the number way, way up in terms of those already impressive amounts of support and actually maybe copy this in other places. And, of course, we don't want to be unique in getting homeless people off the street in Portland. We want to do it everywhere. I hope you'll join Rochelle's children, Michael, Jeremy, and Shoshana, who are glad to give her up for these 420 hours for a good cause, and thanking Rochelle for being part of their team in ending homelessness in Multnomah County in Portland. Thank you, Rochelle. And our two corporate sponsors I wanted to recognize today. First one is Providence Health Systems. And there's Priscilla Lewis. Hey, welcome. Providence Health Systems was one of our very first sponsors, the very first Homeless Connect, and they haven't gone anywhere since. They actually attended the first meeting, and they didn't want to be the only health system in Portland to help out. They actually immediately, the first thing they did was called their competitors, although they had a chance to get their name on it, and said, no, we want to get everybody involved in this thing. They have really been responsible for making sure we're connected into the full range of medical services. And last time, as does happen sometimes, we were just a little bit short on money. And literally, I called Russ Danielson, who's the CEO of Providence. I think many of you know he has served on the steering committee of the 10-year Citizens Commission on Homelessness for over 3.5 years now, helped craft this plan. And as the CEO of a large medical company, the amount of time he's put in is amazing, and basically said, you know, Russ, we're about $5,000 short to pay all the bills, and I could probably get it out of the city, but even as a commissioner, our process is kind of slow in the events on Saturday. And he said, how about we put $10,000 in and just get this thing done? It was unbelievable. But the more interesting thing part about it is that's really actually, as amazing as that was, it's minor compared to what they've done on the medical side of things. They've supported us with pharmaceuticals, vaccines, wheelchairs, durable medical equipment, and they actually gave out vouchers for free surgery last time around. Today we have a couple of representatives here. Russ would be here, except for the team is actually at Skamania working on their corporate strategy, and Priscilla actually left a pretty important event to come down here and join us, so thank you so much. I would also mention that I did want to also recognize Brent Still, who's the regional director of supply chain management, and he's the one who's figured out how to get us the medical supplies as well as locate the refurbished and new wheelchairs. I would also mention that along with some work that OHSU has done with Salvation Army, Providence has really, I think, pioneered what may be one of the most important innovations in the broader plan in addition to Homeless Connect, which is that they have begun a relationship where they actually fund Central City Concern to be able to take chronically homeless people when they are discharged from the emergency room and get them into housing immediately. And so one of the things that has really, I think, plagued our community is that the hospitals do a great job of helping people with emergencies, and then they have no place to send them. And so what happens is, predictably, the conditions reoccur as people go back on the street, and Providence has basically stepped in and actually is arguing that there's a business model here that's better than just a charitable model. If they can partner with our systems and with the nonprofits, they can actually save the expense of potentially getting the person back, as well as the obvious human costs. So Providence is just incredible. We want to thank you. All right. And our fourth winner today, you may recognize some of their faces in the room. Hey, Jay, how are you doing? Is the Portland Trailblazers. And I got to tell you, last summer, I got wind that the San Francisco Giants were dedicating some proceeds from a baseball game to San Francisco's Project Connect, which I will admit they did Project Connect first, but I will also admit that we won the award this year for the best one after copying them. And so we got a hold of Jay and said, you know, the Giants are doing this. What do you guys think about it? And actually, the Blazers had been involved already. Our event is at Memorial Coliseum. The Blazers have been very involved in the first two events. But we said, you know, you got to do better than the Giants. And like literally within, I think, an hour, I'd heard from Jay, and within about 2 days, Tracy Rose and Alyssa Moore had met with our staff and basically said, we can take this thing way past the proceeds from a single game. That's nothing. Let's get this thing done. And ever since then, we've actually had a really deep partnership. And what I mentioned a little while ago was that the idea of Project Homeless Connect is that maybe there's a brand here that has a message that says what we're trying to do is connect with people. And so the Blazers, I think, as you know, for many, many years have done a harvest dinner right around Thanksgiving, I think it is. And they basically open the doors of the Rose Garden, have an immense amount of food, and invite, I know Mayor Potter was there and some of you, to come help serve food. They have the Blazers there, the coach, and it's pretty fun. You know, it's kind of funny, like, you know, rich people, poor people, like, get a thrill from having, like, a Trailblazer serve them dinner. And it was, yes, it's full of people. It's all a really nice event and a good thing. And but they actually said, now we've got an idea. We can do something a little bit more and actually make Harvest Dinner and Homeless Connect. And so what we did with the Blazers' help is we actually got the service providers and some of the links to necessary things into the Rose Garden that day, so that when people came to get their dinner, many of them came to see a famous athlete and Coach McMillan, they also had a chance to hook up with some of the services like they would have at Project Homeless Connect. And so it really became a good event. That wonderful event became something more. It became about making this connection. They started allowing us to put the Homeless Connect logo into a whole variety of places. And then Tracy and her team basically did what we were having trouble doing, but the Blazers don't having trouble doing, which is getting on the phone and calling their corporate partners and sponsors and saying, you got to be part of this thing. And if anyone's never had a call from Tracy, you return that call and get it done. And so for her, really, really did an amazing job. Global Spectrum, who operated the Rose Garden, did a ton. Ovations Food Service has written off a lot of costs for us. So it's really been a team event. Then what happened, I kept saying the Blazers have been just like Providence, really digging in, is Tracy and her team basically said to us, you know, this is a story that you have to tell better. And it turns out they're better at doing promotions and telling stories than even us politicians. And what we're going to show you in just a minute is they actually, at no cost to any of the agencies or Homeless Connect, assigned the Blazer video crew to go out and do a DVD that we can now use to go out and ask and make asks and show people what this is all about. And so it was pretty wild. We're going to show that to you. But before I do that, I want to introduce the folks at the Blazers who've given us the star power. Mike Golub, Executive Vice President of Business Affairs. Jay Isaac, Senior VP of Business Affairs. Mike Fennell, Vice President and General Counsel. Brad Stith, Director of Ticket Services. Is Brad here? Selling tickets, right? Jerry Moss, Tracy Rose, and Brittany Davidson from Community Relations, all here. Mike Scanlon and Lynn Lauge, I hope I said that right, from Global Spectrum. Hi. And Tony Hendricks from Ovations. And Tracy Rose, who I've mentioned, the Director of Community Relations. So obviously this is a big team, and they're all here because they've all actually really stepped up and have made Project Homeless Connect get to this next level. So thank you, Trailblazers. Thanks. We will show this short film and then maybe take some pictures with the council. And I did want to recognize Ryan Flaherty, who's the Trailblazers creative director, and film editor Billy Olson, who directed and produced the film you're about to see. They took the crew to Sisters of the Road to transition projects and actually got the executives from Nike and Providence that you see in the movie, in the film already, and as part of it. They wrote the script, arranged the graphics, and so as you can tell, they really did the whole thing. So why don't we show the video? I think it'll get you fired up, as we hope it will, our next round of sponsors who we hope to give awards to next year. And then we'll wrap this up, and I thank the council for your time.
On any given night, over 2,000 people sleep on the streets in our community. They are adults, young people, couples, and families with children. They are homeless, sometimes temporarily and sometimes for the long term. But no matter how they got there, most homeless people don't want to live the way they do.
The vast majority of people, 95-99% of people, of course, do not want to be homeless. I think that one of the most harmful myths is that people choose to be homeless. It is an incredibly difficult position to be in.
So many people have just had really maybe a rough start in life. There's a lot of multi-generational poverty, a lot of people with mental health issues that are untreated, lots of people who just need someone to kind of help them along.
We have people who have been computer programmers in Silicon Valley, people who, a lot of people, of course, who have struggled to just make ends meet for many years, and then one thing caused them to be homeless, which I think there's thousands and thousands of people in that position where they're one paycheck away from being homeless.
The good news is a campaign to end homelessness has begun in the Portland region. Since 2004, policymakers and citizens have realized that homelessness is not an inevitable truth that must be endured. And an emphasis on doing what works, helping homeless people find permanent homes, is now underway.
We absolutely, if we made it a priority, could end homelessness. And we're creative, we're learning a lot. If we work together and we just have the will, we absolutely could end homelessness in Portland, Oregon.
We actually could end homelessness. We'd have to work with it as a whole, as a community. So everyone, businesses, social service providers, regular citizens, everybody has to do it. It's a huge commitment, but I think it is possible. And it's probably what keeps me and all of my staff coming to work every day. We all want to be unemployed by the end of the 10-year homeless plan.
Well, the 10-year plan is a community effort to try and get people who are living on the street into a home. And really that means get them to be part of the community. And so it's working with hospitals, even with the jails, to try and change the way we do things. And our focus is really get people into housing, connect them with the community, help them sort of rebuild their self-worth and be productive again. It's really in some ways that simple.
The reason this strategy works is that once homeless people have housing, they are ready to get the help they need to stay there. By focusing on housing first and then connecting homeless people with services such as medical care, addiction counseling, legal advice, and job counseling, we've been able to keep over 65% of homeless people given permanent housing in their homes for 2 years.
Government can't end homelessness, and no one person can end homelessness, but if you think about it, it's not that complicated a situation, but we've become accustomed to it. I think many of us grew up assuming there's always homeless people, and when in fact, it's a relatively new phenomenon. So I think we can do it, but it's going to take the whole community, and it's partly giving, it's partly changing things, and it's also just really saying that all these folks are part of this city, and we're going to make sure they have a place to live and a way to be productive.
A lot of social service providers, of course, need money and funding. That's a given. And a lot of our social service providers can do great things with donations and funding. I also think that the community as a whole, if they have something special that they can do, like they're a landlord or a housing provider, can open up a room or an apartment unit to either a social service agency or some formerly homeless people. If you're an employer, you can hire people and give them maybe apprenticeships or an opportunity to learn a new trade. But I think what it all kind of boils down to is having some empathy, being able to provide some financial assistance as much as you possibly can, but also educating yourself on what it means to be homeless, what it means to be mentally ill, what kind of things people have to struggle through on a daily basis just to survive a day.
Part of what the 10-year plan is trying to better use what's out there. We do need more housing, we need more services, but we also need to be more smart about how we do things, and we need to connect with people more. So Project Homeless Connect, for example, isn't just about connecting homeless people to services, it's about connecting the community to those people as well, because people want to help. And I believe if we actually use the resources and the gifts that we have in this community, we can solve the problem. So it isn't a matter of, we throw money at problems all the time, and that's important to fund things, but it's really more about rethinking how we connect with each other as human beings.
Recently, the community has come together to show our homeless citizens that we care and we want to help. Project Homeless Connect not only connects the homeless with needed services, it connects our community with the homeless.
It was just really amazing. These people went out of their way to make me feel special, to make me feel like I mattered and that my children mattered. And they had medical services, dental services, housing. They had all kinds of things that just all put into one big balloon that you can go 50 miles in one day or in a year and never be able to get them all.
Well, we've really worked a lot with corporations and business leaders throughout the city and really the state. And when I say that the government can't end it, that's completely true. It has to be a partnership with everyone. And so what's happened is we found, once we started Project Homeless Connect and gave some structured ways for people to help, they really stepped up. The Portland Trailblazers tied their annual Thanksgiving dinner to service provisions. Supercuts was there giving haircuts. It was a great training ground for people and made them feel good. And it isn't so much just charity as it is seeing that if we can connect with these people that are on the street, the city gets stronger and the business community is stronger as well, because there's a lot of problems that the business community can solve by using the things they're very good at.
Well, I think Nike and other businesses in this community have a big role to play. Not only are we important corporate citizens, but also we have employees who live, work, and raise families in this community. And if we can be part of the solution, a part of the campaign to end homelessness, that'll make it for a better, stronger, healthier community for all of us.
Whether we are reading to a child or feeding the homeless, or building a home, there's something everyone can do. I think sometimes we are naive to the fact that we all could be faced with this situation. And the fact that we see that and we recognize that, we want to be a part and we want to try and prevent that. What we want to do is challenge other people to join us, the Portland Trailblazers, in helping to prevent homelessness.
Once something turns in an individual and they feel like there's support and there's caring, they turn around. And in a lot of ways, the business community is better positioned to send that message. You know, it's that vote of confidence that comes from a business person saying, I care and this is good business as well.
I'm proud to live in a community that comes together to take care of its people, all of its people. You know, we're so fortunate here in Portland that neighbors will come together to try and solve our social ills rather than ignore them or just manage them. At Providence Health System, we are committed to ending one of our city's most lingering problems, and that's the problem of homelessness. We can make a difference if you step forward. Start by volunteering. Once you get engaged, I know you'll want to do more. I encourage you to join my team at Providence and work together as a community to solve this problem. I know we can end homelessness in Portland if we work together.
We can end homelessness.
We can end homelessness.
We can end homelessness.
Portland can end homelessness.
So thanks again, Trailblazers. You can see the quality. They could have used a better, you know, narrator there in the middle. But other than that, it's really, really wonderful. And we do believe that this will really be something that we can use to communicate to folks who haven't been there, who can and really get involved. So I think what I'll do is maybe starting with Bob and then Rochelle and then Providence and the Blazers, maybe ask each of our Warbinners to come up and see if I could ask the council to pose for a picture. And I did want to thank Chair Wheeler, former Chair Lynn, and particularly Commissioner Cruz Walsh, who also been working very closely on this and had other things this afternoon, and Kathleen Gardepi and my staff, who about a year and a half ago I said we got to do this thing, and she took the lead and did it. Thank you, Kathleen.
I can get you all in there. Go, everybody get in there.
Was there any public testimony, Sue?
No, there was not.
All right, so that takes care of that. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
That was just excellent. Yes, congratulations, Eric. That was great.
Good work. Great presentation.
Make sure you get your medal back. I think I went down that end.
It's his, and he's keeping it.
We'll take the 3 p.m. time certain now. Please read item 434.
Oh, excuse me, Mayor. Can we take a vote on the report, to accept the report?
Oh, I'm sorry. We do need a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams.
Great leadership, Commissioner Stinn. Look forward to participating in my next one. Aye.
Leonard.
That was an excellent presentation. Thank you. Aye.
Salzman.
Yeah, good job, Commissioner Stinn, and all the partners who made Homeless Connect successful. Thank you. Aye.
Stinn.
Thanks, everyone, for your help. Aye.
Potter.
Thanks, Commissioner Stinn. All the good folks who, from the city and from our community, gave their time and effort. It sure paid off. I'm very, very proud of this city. Thank you. Aye. Now we'll move to the 3 p.m. time certain.
We can just put it over.
Mr. Lobdell's come in, too.
Is
the item the Measure 37 claim would like to set that over to another day.
Okay. Come on up, Chris.
We did mail Mr. Labdell is here. He misunderstood.